Welcome to the Atheist Experience. Today is Sunday, June 2nd, 2019. I'm your host, Don Baker. With me is co-host Phil Session.
Oh, yes.
Good. And this is our very first time together.
It is. It is.
So pretty awesome. That'll be awesome. Yeah. Let's see. The Atheist Experience is a production of the Atheist Community of Austin. It is a Texas-based nonprofit educational organization promoting the separation of religion and government and the positive atheist culture. And as a little factoid, the ACA was started in April 1996, gaining new memberships largely through newspaper ads. So out of little things. We have a wonderful studio audience, a lot of folks from Florida, apparently. And so a lot of pilgrims from Florida. You can join us after the show at 6:30 or so for an after the show dinner and conversation with the host, the crew, and the members of our audience. We are at the ACA Freethought Library, 1507 West Koenig Lane. You'll have to park on the street because our little parking lot is all full. The meals are free, but we ask for donations to offset expenses. I don't know what the meal is today, but it's always good.
Yeah, I think it's something to do with meat or barbecue. Like, so there's a smoker happening in the back.
Oh,
so
my goodness.
It's something going back
yes,
there.
Yes, it's barbecue season in Texas, isn't it?
Yeah, it's definitely hot enough.
Right. I don't have any special announcements. Phil, did you have anything that you wanted to chat about?
No, nothing in particular. I did want to give a shout out and a thanks to all the folks that came out this morning to the Austin Atheists Helping the Homeless giveaway. It was about 30 volunteers or so that came out, including a few brand new folks that have lived around this area that, you know, had heard about it through word of mouth and said, hey, I just want to come out, and brought some clothes as well. So I appreciate those two folks for the first time. But let me see, what do we have special out there? We had bug spray. Apparently it went on sale this past week for like 97 cents. And so we had all these cans of bug spray out there
yes.
for people to have some flashlights, cold water on ice. We also had some nice cool Kool-Aid out there. I think, well, it was like a mango type of something that was out there as well for people to kind of sip because it was warm already in the morning and it was very humid. So all of us were just dripping down sweat under, even though we're in the shade. I had to change clothes completely. That's what happened here. But I wanted to give a shout out to all those folks because that was a wonderful experience, as it always, all the folks that come down there. So thank you all so much.
Well, that's cool. That's cool.
Oh, yeah.
I don't have a topic per se. I have one queued up, but I'll do that as a co-host. But I did bring in a newspaper article I saw today in the Austin American Statesman, June 2nd. And the title is U.S. Catholic Church Reports Big Rise in Sex Abuse Allegations. And I'm going to read a couple little things out of it just to bring them out here. Quantifying its vast sex abuse crisis, the U.S. Roman Catholic Church said Friday that allegations of child sex abuse by clerics more than doubled in its latest 12-month reporting period, and that its spending on victim compensation and child protection surged above $300
million. Wow.
The number of allegations is likely due to rise further during the current fiscal year, given that the Catholic Diocese in New York, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania have started large compensation programs in the wake of scathing Pennsylvania grand jury report released in August. The grand jury identified more than 300 priests in six of the state's dioceses. That's kind of old news. But there's the money quote here is from the SNAP, the Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests. Victims are coming forward now. The quote, victims are coming forward now because of real progress by secular authorities. Lawmakers are increasingly getting rid of archaic, predator-friendly laws, and 16 attorneys general have launched investigations that so many victims are feeling hopeful. So hooray for sexual or secular authorities and secular efforts to do that.
Because, right. Yes.
And it's sort of another failure of Christianity, another failure of the God, right?
Right. And I'm just, it's just, you know, just the expanse of this whole, the network, the abuse that occurred, and then shipping the priest off to another location.
Right.
And it's just, you know, things might happen again. It's just, it was just incredible. And I'm glad that, you know, folks that experienced it at least are feeling empowered enough to
report
that.
Right.
Actually,
right.
You know, give us a better scope of how widespread this is. But, you know, there's still some people out there that will just kind of brush it under the rug or say, well, that's just, oh, that's, you know, how it was, what they're doing much better now, or not even want to really acknowledge it, even though they may adhere to that faith in particular, being a Catholic,
right,
just kind of move it beyond their purview and just kind of go on with their lives.
Right.
And it's just, it's interesting to see.
And there's a lot of shame associated with reporting.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's just a sad thing. But apparently this whole money flowing back to the victims has become part of the business model for the Catholic Church.
So it's just an expense that they have on a nice line. We got to make sure that we write that in.
Yeah.
When you get to the point where you write that in as a normal course of business expense, it may be something else to consider.
Right.
Good night.
And if you're donating to these folks, you know, maybe you should think again. All right. Okay. If we have nothing else, let's go to calls. What do you think?
Yeah, go for it.
Let's see. We have, let's start with number one. So Josh from Missouri, what have you got for us today, Josh?
Oh, Josh, are you there?
Maybe.
Are you on mute?
Yes, hello?
Hey. Oh, there it is.
Hi, sorry about that. I had to run to my phone. I've been with you guys for quite a while now, so I apologize about that.
Okay.
All right. You've been on hold for a while, so I understand, but go ahead.
Yeah. So the topic I wanted to talk about today, hopefully I'll just keep it short, would be secular versus religious upbringing. And I'll go into a little bit more detail about that. But my roommate in college and I, we were getting into a discussion. Mm-hmm. He was raised Catholic and has since become he identifies as a non-believer. And we were talking about what we would do if we had kids. And even though he identifies as a non-believer, he insists that he will still raise his children in a religious background. And he believes that this would be more beneficial. It would, I guess, result in a less violent person or something. I'm not quite sure what he's
I've heard that sort of thing, too.
So I was just wondering to know what you guys' thoughts were about that.
Wow. Yeah, that's...
I can take a stab at it.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think that there seems to be an instinct where when there's a kid born and the thoughts are towards raising the kid, there is this nostalgia for religion or a religious upbringing that you might have had and some of the good things. I remember what Martin Wagner would say, you know, that he had just a wonderful time in the church as a kid because there were all these activities and fun things to, you know, and a lot of it is quite wholesome. And daycare. That's not a small thing for a lot of folks. And, you know, I think our secular organizations have some catching up to do yet on those sorts of things where we need to do better in supporting folks with children, especially young children, to help them, you know, grow up better and these sorts of things. And so it may be that the community part of the religion is important for folks, and it may be that they don't have a good secular alternative. That said, you know, I have to say that the indoctrination is bad. You know, I think that in Sunday school, a lot of kids learn pretty early on about the Noah's flood and, you know, God killed everybody, and isn't that wonderful? Because the little furry animals go on a boat ride, you know,
over that genocide part a little bit.
Yeah,
in the story,
and it's not ever because it's discussed so young with these kids that I don't think they ever sort of take it out and reexamine it again as adults, and so it becomes a bit of a thing that is a little I don't know, salt in the machine grinding away.
Well, I know that, I mean, there's a lot of secular families that, you know, are raising their children as secular. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be, you know, critical thinkers. It's just, you know, that's something that you have to instill and something, a lesson that you have to teach. But there's a lot of resources that are out there. If you look at secular parenting just on Google and try to find some resources, as, you know, finding good lessons to, you know, teach morality on that side. But what you pointed out about the community side, that is a big issue, because I was raised in large church homes, and you had these just large functions and Easter, and, you know, there was these big hullabaloos that went around that, and got to get your best suit out for this thing. I remember I had a blueberry and gold suit.
You were styling, huh?
For an Easter. And it looked amazing. Like, let's be clear. Like, it looked amazing. And I mean, it doesn't, of course, fit now, but my goodness, it was awesome. And I would totally wear it now if I could. But, you know, that community aspect I thought was good. However, along with that came other issues when I realized that I was gay. Well, that caused a lot of turmoil, inner turmoil with me, because the way I was taught, you know, this was against the word of God. I had to go through that and really.
You were defective.
Yeah. And deal with that for years until I kind of justified it internally to myself. But if I was raised in a way that, you know, was secular in nature and didn't go in, you know, it was more, you know, science-based, fact-based, you know, however you wanted to describe it. There's a lot of things that I went through that I wouldn't have had to back then. And I still probably would have been the empathic person that I am today, you know, wanting to volunteer and everything else. But some of the issues I had to go, like even coming out as atheist, that was a whole trial. That was a whole big thing. It wasn't something that was small or insignificant. It was so large of a decision about how I should do that. You know, should I post it here? All of these things. And
so you came out twice, right?
Right, right. And I just, like, to say that one would be better than the other, oh, this way would, you know, make you more moral. And it's just like, if you look at the jail system, well, that doesn't seem necessarily bear out in the statistics of those religious beliefs of those that are currently in prison, although there's, you know, there's some gray area in some cases. But there are secular families that are raising perfectly well-adjusted children. You know, we have the show, one of the ACA shows, Parenting Beyond Belief, that people call and talk about their issues raising secular kids or raising a secular household. And so I don't see the data that necessarily says, I guess what your friend is asserting, that, you know, raising someone in a secular home might necessarily make them more, you know, morally repugnant or something along those lines. I'm not sure how well that plays out.
Yeah, so if I remember the conversation correctly, I think the way he put it was he would treat it kind of like a Santa Claus kind of system, where he would indeed teach his children that that God was real and all of this stuff. And I think his argument was that it would cause them to be more moral, in the sense that when it comes to raising kids, it's more effective to teach them on a, he wouldn't admit it outright, but more on a fear-based system. Like, he believes that the kids wouldn't misbehave so much if they knew that there was a God watching them at the time. And then he would say that, oh, as they get older, they'll grow out of it and they'll learn that it was like Santa Claus. And,
yeah, but some people don't grow out.
Growing up, they knew that they learned how to behave, I guess. So that was the benefit that they got out of it.
Yeah, the morality that comes with a lot of religions is rules-based. And I don't know. And I'm a computer scientist, and rules-based systems always have contradictions and gaps. So they're inherently flawed, and so a God would never do that. But we have to grow out of that sort of morality, because, you know, the because God said so morality, right, and grow into a values-based morality, because that's the only way you're going to answer or try to answer the more difficult moral questions, you know, where you have values coming into conflict, and how are you going to deal with it?
Right. Especially when, if you're saying that, oh, you shouldn't, you know, steal, you know, little Timmy's toy on the playground, you know, because God will get you. Well, that's, you know, that's right. Versus, you know, talking of, you know, actually going into the issues of why taking that would be wrong, and, you know, teaching your children about how that affects other people. And, you know, I mean, depending on how old they are, you may not necessarily go into, like, blow it up to societal proportions of how that affects things, but you can at least, you know, instill those things. Like, what if I took your Nintendo Switch from your house? What if I took it there and put it in my room and kept it in mine the whole time? Or what if one of your friends took it? Right. How would that make you feel? You know, trying to get them to empathize and really understand that, so that it's not just because I said so, but rather this is wrong because this causes harm. Even if you bring that down to their level, you know, whatever age level they are, I think that may be a more effective way of instilling that value versus an I told you so type of thing. Right. And then there's a punishment after to back it up.
Okay. Anything else, Josh?
I should see that. Yeah, I think that's about it. I mean, just getting your opinion. Like, do you think that secular and religious upbringing both have their advantages and disadvantages? Could either one just be superior to the other, or are they just What do you think?
I think that a secular upbringing can be superior, but it often isn't.
Really?
So, I think you can have a completely well-adjusted kid that understands how the world works and, you know, doesn't have any delusions about, you know, how, you know, God's taking care of things or doing things, and knowing that when Fluffy dies, the cat is really gone. Yeah. and isn't just often. Yeah. But, you know, I think as far as the secular upbringing of folks, I don't know that everybody's equipped to be a good parent. And we don't have as much support in the secular community for those parents. And so they have a bit of a harder road to hoe.
Yeah. I hear what you're saying. I think that covers it. Thank you guys so much for the call. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Josh.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. Let's go to, trying to figure out this phone system. here we go. Let's go to Karen in California.
Oh, I think you pressed the wrong one.
Did I?
I think so.
No, yeah. I think.
Yeah,
think
you're on good. Greg right now.
Am I? Oh, yeah. I'm on Greg. Well, let's do Greg since we're, I'm sorry. Hey, Greg from Colorado. You have an argument for God. You're an atheist and you have an argument for God. Is that right?
Our worst argument ever made about God. That's what I'm seeing here.
We've certainly heard lots of bad arguments. Greg?
Yes. Yes, I do. There is, I did want to kind of get to the worst argument ever made, and that's the argument that God causes consciousness, which I think is an atrocious argument that no one should ever use. But first, I had a question about debates, and I've seen Matt, I haven't seen either of you hosts enter in debates, but I always hear they debate, and the question is, does God exist? And I always hear that this is an important question, and to me, it is at best an ill-posed question, and it is, to me, completely devoid of meaning. So why is it that you think it's an important question to ask?
Well, if you pose it a little bit better and say, is there such a thing as a God? Maybe that was a little bit better posed question. It still leaves open what is the what do you define to be a God?
Right.
What qualifies? What doesn't qualify? These sorts of things. But I do consider it an important question in the sense that if there's a God that might be running the show, it's a different universe than if there is no God, because there is this idea of a very powerful agency, and you might want to pay attention to it for various reasons. So I do consider the question important, and I do agree that these sorts of questions are often ill-posed. I remember back to a philosophy book. I took philosophy in college years ago, and they had an essay on the existence of God, and they didn't define God, and they just kind of brushed away the multi-theism question altogether. Mm-hmm. And started talking about the Christian God without even sort of justifying that whole thing. And I think that's kind of what's going on with that question that you posed, is if you start talking about God with a capital G, you're really talking about a particular God with a particular set of features and things that needs a lot of justification.
Rather than starting from the wider span of does a deity exist, and then trying to narrow down, like, is there just one? Is there multiple? And
yeah,
then
right.
Focusing it on.
Yeah, it's almost like you're making separate leaps of faith between these questions. Is there a God? How many gods? You know, what's the nature of the God? Is it a personal God? These sorts of things.
How are you determining, you know, these attributes? How are you actually arriving to it? But I had a similar conversation with somebody on a campus down in San Antonio. It was along the same lines, where it was kind of brushed away, like the multi-theistic type of thing, because it didn't make sense or something along those lines. And it's just like, well, how do we get to that?
You know,
how did we get to that point?
There's a lot of stuff broken in the world. If you have an all-powerful God that's supposedly can make everything work perfectly, then why is there anything broken?
We just don't understand the mind.
Right.
Well, that's kind of what I was getting, but I was coming more from the fact that if you say have a sentence say like God exists. Now, to me, the reason why this is a meaningless statement, or you say go back to the question, say, does God exist? Why that's a meaningless statement, mostly because existence is ambiguous. What is meant by ambiguous? Now, to me, and I'll tell you what I mean, because for me, existence, I always learned that existence meant that you had mass and you occupied space. So included, everything that has mass and occupies space is, that includes just about everything, tables, chairs, pencils, computers, cell phones, all of those things have mass because they're made out of quarks, matter, and yep, electrons.
We're with you.
And all of those things have mass and they take up space. And you can say, well, does sound exist by this definition? And well, it definitely, sound takes up space. And since Einstein said that matter and energy are the same, then yes, it has mass. So sound exists. Same with color. See, it stuff. But where you might need to include the extended definition and say, like, if I drop my cell phone or I'm driving in my car and a rock hits the windshield cracks. And cracks exist, but it's tough to make the case that they have mass.
There's some challenging philosophical questions, and then you have a lot of theists that say, well, God is outside space and time, and it's kind of a segue off to special pleading, right? And so,
right,
what is that even compatible with any sort of notion of existence? So yeah, there's right, a lot of problems here.
Yeah, and so, the overall point then is you can say, well, like cracks or consciousness or something, those exist because you can say if you can measure it, then it exists.
Mm-hmm.
And you can measure just about anything except for the only thing that might fall outside and you extend and say it exists would be stuff like ideas. Which you can claim that consciousness is an idea. I mean, you're describing, say, a right, state of thoughts, mind, although it's difficult, but you could work out systems to measure consciousness. But ideas, say, like numbers, 1, 2, 3, or like money or anything else, you can, or nation states, or
shared abstractions.
Any
right,
of those, you can say those exist because we can. Those are ideas, and I can communicate them. And the point that I'm trying to make is, like, if you say it's a spiritual, requires a different frame of existence, I don't think so, because anything that you claim that exists spiritually, you can also claim, I don't see any difference between a spiritual existence and an idea existence. So if you claim something is spiritual, I don't see how you can claim that that's a somehow different existence.
Well, you're forcing us to argue the theistic point, and I don't think I know enough to argue that. Well, Greg, thank you very much for your call.
But the thing is, if you're talking about spiritual being good or bad, then you're differentiating between good and bad ideas. Bye.
All right. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, man. All right. So,
you're going to try for
it? Let's try for Karen this time. Okay. Hello, Karen. So you want to know why we're atheists, Karen?
Yeah. I just want to know what you guys base it off of.
So we define atheism as the lack of belief in a God, and I don't believe because I haven't seen sufficient evidence to warrant belief in a God.
So you don't base it off because you haven't seen him, or what?
I You know, I'm open to all sorts of evidence. You know, we have evidence for quarks. We have evidence for the Big Bang. We have evidence for, I don't know.
No, I understand what you're saying. There is plenty of evidence all over the world for a lot of things. I understand that.
Yes.
But all I'm saying is, do you guys maybe also base it off because you haven't seen him with your own eyes? Is that another factor to it?
Well, even if something appeared right now in front of us that we couldn't necessarily explain, it's not something that I would attribute to a deity. It would just be, this is an unexplained phenomenon. Let's explore this further. And so it's not necessarily that, you know, something hasn't appeared before my eyes. It's just the culmination that I have not been convinced of, you know, what I've seen in the world and, you know, our understanding of the universe as it is at this time. That's nothing that's leading me to that conclusion on that side. But, you know, we could be wrong, but unless I have a reason or substantiated evidence to think differently, this is the most intellectually honest position that I can take.
Mm-hmm. Well, now I can't hear him, Eric.
Oh, can you hear us? Are we still good?
Yeah, I hear you now.
Okay.
The only reason why I was getting at all that, you know, getting at that point of being able to physically see him, mm-hmm. you know, with your own eyes, and maybe that would be a factor to why you guys maybe don't believe, as I was just going to say, just like with spirits, you know, with whatever you want to call them, ghost, image, spirit, you know, people don't believe in them neither, but I do because I've seen it before. So just because, you know, you don't see something don't mean it don't exist, is all I'm trying to say.
So it would seem that your God could if your God could make himself visible to you, he could make himself visible to everybody, right?
Well, yeah, I imagine things go certain ways because people are at different points in their lives, whatever's going on in their lives. We wake up at different levels on being able to go through different things in life, you know.
But you know, we have a TV show. We have this skepticism thing going on, and you know, it's a bit of a juggernaut at this point. We have thousands and thousands of subscribers. If God could come and convince us or appear on the show, we could put him right here in the middle. You know, we would maybe change our tune, and wouldn't that be good for whatever, you know, religions?
I understand what you're saying. I do. You know.
Yeah, but even like when you were referencing, you know, ghosts and spirits and saying that you believe them, even though you acknowledge that other people don't because they haven't seen them, what I will say is kind of reiterating what I said before, you know, seeing something doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, oh, this was a spirit or this was a ghost. Like, you know, I don't deny that your experience or that you had an experience because your experience is your own, but you know, there's a little more layering to that because if I'm seeing something, you know, or if an apparition kind of appeared, you know, first of all, I'd be, you know, that's interesting. That's not something that normally happens, you know, acknowledging that, I'm having this experience, but I don't necessarily attribute that to anything in particular without trying to find out, okay, what was this? Did anyone else see it? Can anyone else corroborate this experience that I just had? Was it just me? Is something internal to me, or is it something that actually happened where other people can also be affected by this experience? And so it's a little more than just the seeing it.
The reason why I do believe is because I not only myself have seen something, but my two daughters have, you know, seen something at the same time, the same thing that I've seen before in broad daylight, you know, and they're, you know, in their 20s now, you know, but when they were younger, like, see, 8 and 12 or something like that, I don't remember now, it's been a long time ago, but it was in the daytime and we're sitting in the living room mm-hmm. and I was reading a newspaper, sitting on the couch, and they were watching cartoons. Nobody was scared, nobody was thinking of nothing, and, you know, and then we seen this little, I don't know how you explain it, it's like a dark matter, you know, coming through the living room floor, but not on the floor, going right past us. It scared us all three so bad that, you know, we yelled and jumped up and ran out. We all seen the same thing, you know. That's, like I said, maybe other people haven't seen stuff. I know I got a 16-year-old that hasn't seen stuff, you know, and he finds it hard to believe. You know, he don't believe in it, of course, that I've, you know, he was trying to tell me it's a mass hallucination or something. That's what scientists say. But like I told him, I don't believe
that. Well, that can be an explanation, but, you know, it sounds like you had a sort of a mysterious occurrence and you interpreted it a certain way. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that I would have jumped to that conclusion because in order for something to be a god or a ghost or whatever, it certainly is helpful to know that those things exist or those things, you know, have some sort of presence to begin with, right?
There's strange things that go on in this world.
Yes.
It's unexplainable.
Yes.
You know?
And we're prone to mistakes and we're prone to suggestion. And it's possible that you made it a particular interpretation and your daughters followed suit because that made sense or because you were raised in this particular belief system, was where you went for,
No, I wasn't raised in that kind of belief system at all.
Okay.
Actually, I had a very mean, hateful stepdad, you know, and we never went to church. We never did anything. So no, I wasn't raised up to believe in anything.
Okay.
I don't push it on my kids neither. I never made them go to church or nothing. You know, I believe in God in my own heart. I don't push it on my kids. They don't never have to go to church or anything. They don't want to do like that. You know, I go once in a blue moon myself. I hardly never go, but that don't mean that I don't love God and believe in him. You know, I still do, but on my own terms, I don't push it on the world or on nobody.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's everybody's right to their own beliefs and feelings. I agree with that. You know, I'm just saying, just because you can't see something don't mean it don't exist. That's all I'm saying.
That's fine, but the time to believe in something is when there's sufficient evidence. Personally, if I had an experience like that, I would just sort of categorize this as something weird happened to me and I don't know what it was. And I might be, you know, willing to investigate it a fair bit to satisfy my curiosity. Or I might just say, hey, this mysterious thing happened to me and I don't know what it was. And I'm going to just leave it uninterpreted. That's kind of how I would approach something like that.
Well, that's basically what I've done for all these years. You know, mm-hmm. my kids are way up and older now. I'm 56, you know, so I hardly ever talk about it.
Yeah. Right. But when you attributed to saying that, you know, it was a ghost or a spirit or something like that,
Well, I don't know what it was, honestly. I'm just saying, it was something totally out of the ordinary.
Yeah.
And that totally unexplainable. My daughters reacted at the same instant time I did. You know, they've seen it, obviously.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying.
Well, I'm sorry. I don't know what it was. I wish I could shed more light on it.
Sure, sure.
But I know. I don't either.
Yeah. Anyway, well, thank you for your call, Karen. I appreciate it. And I hope you call again sometime.
Thank you, guys, too.
Thank you.
You guys take care.
All right.
Have a good day. Rest of your day.
All right. All right, you too.
All right. Did you have one that you wanted to take?
No. I didn't have a preference on the side.
Okay. Let's see. We have... let's see. We have Saad in Pakistan.
Hey, Don. Hi, Phil. How are you?
Hey, welcome.
I'm doing well.
So, yeah, before I start, Assalamu alaikum. May peace be on both and on everyone who's listening and you guys as well. Before I move to the topic, I kind of wanted to address a few things. Over the weeks that, you know, I've been on a few times and I've noticed a lot of, you know, hateful comments about me on YouTube. And I read them, but, you know, I don't really take them personally because, you know, people have said all sorts of rubbish.
YouTube comments are kind of a cesspool. So welcome to the club.
Yeah, I know. You guys get bashed on too, so I won't. No, so I'm not, I don't think, I'm glad I'm not the only one here, but I just want to kind of address that, you know, I'm not trying to, like, you know, people have called me, oh, you're preaching religion of Islam, and I'm not. I believe in something very clearly. I practice what I preach. If I'm not even practicing my own faith properly, then how am I supposed to teach it? You know, I can't be a PhD in anything if I haven't attained a PhD degree. So, you know, I'm just here to debate things, you know, having some interesting conversations and maybe figure out some of the mysteries of the universe together. That's basically my main aim.
That sounds wonderful.
Not trying to convert anybody. So I just wanted to get the disclaimer out there. So anyone who, you know, wants to, you know, who all the haters out there, hey, I love you guys. Thank you for hating me.
Haters gonna hate, right?
Yeah.
Is that what you wanted to talk about or no?
No, I do want to go. So, interestingly, the Karen was talking about, you know, spiritual beings, you know, people, and close encounters of the third kind, stuff like that. You know, honestly, I have myself never experienced anything, and I hope I would never do. and I would hope for the same for anyone. But according to my faith, there are beings that exist in the world, mm-hmm. along who live besides humans. It's in the Quran. They're called jinns, or you know, supernatural. I wouldn't. They're just
sure.
people. Okay. I mean,
and you believe this based on faith, right?
Yeah, obviously, I wouldn't want to experience any of that stuff. Like I said, you know.
Okay,
because it does sound very spooky.
I think Matt may have discussed this with you, but you can your faith be wrong?
At this point, I'd like to be proven it's wrong. But at this point, I haven't come across any hard evidence saying.
Our position is that faith is not a good reason to give for believing in something, and the reason is. You can take anything on faith, and there are many more ways to be wrong than there are to be correct. And so you want to have evidence for what you believe so that you sort of make good decisions.
Well, like Karen said, something happened to her and her family. I've heard of stories from my friends and, you know, family members of, you know, some experiences that they've
witnessed. A mystery is not really proof of anything, is it?
Right.
Yeah, that's the thing. So, I mean, let's assume that there is evidence, hard evidence, of these beings, whatever you want to call them, whatever name you want to give to them, ghosts or jinns or whatever, you know, or spirits. Or, you know, so would that still be proof that they're the creator?
Well, not necessarily a creator. It would, no. If you had hard evidence that these beings exist, then we have our hard evidence that these things exist. And assuming if we have hard evidence, we have some way to measure and detect, these beings, and we've reached that conclusion based on a preponderance of evidence. But that doesn't necessarily give rise to anything beyond that. All we can see is, hey, these things exist, but we would have no explanation at that time as to where they came from, unless we had some information beyond that.
Right. So, you know, if we encountered another race from another planet, that wouldn't necessarily prove that a creator existed. It may be that, you know, life emerged independently on some other planet. Yeah.
But it wouldn't.
There could be other causes.
Right. It wouldn't allow us to draw an inference about a, you know, creator or a deity on that side. I guess based on that alone, depending on what that hard evidence was.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does, like you mentioned, it could possibly hallucination. Someone smoking too many, someone's on too many drugs, and just gets this weird out of body experience. You know,
yeah. I mean, or it just, you know, something occurred in their experience, and they saw something, didn't know what it was, but then they may have attributed it to, you know, a ghost or an apparition or something else that they have heard of without necessarily investigating what exactly that was, and that's it's kind of the whole point of that.
You know, I've had my family, you know, they strongly believe in certain things. For example, mm-hmm. like, you know, there's this concept of istikhara. It's basically, you know, it's technically faith-based, but what's really interesting is people really believe in all of this. I do have an understanding of how it works, and I kind of see how I'll explain to you what it is. Basically, istikhara is basically, for example, you know, a very basic thing. You know, you want to buy a Ferrari or a Lamborghini. I'd rather you get both. But or any decision that you want to make in your life that's a very crucial decision, for example, you know, it could be anything. You know, invest in certain stocks or marry somebody or whatever. You know, so any of those really real decisions that could boggle your mind and you're confused about, you know, making between two certain decisions. So what people do is basically they read this dua or prayer, as it's called in English. And, you know, it basically says that it basically asks God to guide you and let you know that if in between the two things, mm-hmm. whatever, A or B, if A is good for me, then make sure, then, you know, make sure I'm content with deciding on A and happy with it. And, you know, keep B away from me and vice versa. So that's the kind of concept that a lot of people here, especially in Pakistan, do. They usually go to certain people who they're called Allahwalas, or in Urdu, you know, it's basically, you know, godly people. And
yeah.
They feel like these people are at a very high level.
Let me tell you how this strikes me. This strikes me as kind of an abdication of responsibility. If you have a difficult decision to make, you're sort of saying, I give up. I'm gonna, you know, let the fates decide, or let somebody else decide. And You know, if the decision turns out to be a bad one, it's not my fault. It's God's fault, right?
No, this must have been the best path for me.
Right. Like, or I just don't understand what, you know, I'm just not seeing the virtue of this failure that occurred because of the decision that was made.
Yeah. I'm curious as to how that goes down. Cause like, what if you, does somebody test that to say, you know, they don't do this and they make a decision and it turns out well, what exactly does that mean on that side? Did you just get it lucky or
right.
Like, you know, what's the pass fail rate of this?
It reminds me,
method.
You know, I've been to some of the castles in Spain and they're walled cities. And when you leave the castle, there are these images over the doors, of saints, and you're supposed to pray to them to return safely. And those that return safely can credit those images. And those that don't return, the folks can say, oh, well, because they didn't pray.
So what did you do,
Don? That's right. It strikes me as that sort of thing.
Yeah. No, there's actually a joke about this. It's a very common joke in Pakistan, especially. So there's the joke goes like this. So there's one guy who's constantly going to the masjid or mosque. They go every day, they're praying for a Ferrari or a lottery ticket. You know, let's say, this is the joke, is a lottery ticket. You know, I want to win the lottery, I want to win the lottery, I want to win the lottery. Every day he's just praying, I want to win the lottery, I want to win the lottery. So, you know, he keeps asking God, I want to win the lottery. And then he realizes he's not winning it. You know, he's praying so hard. You know, he's praying on what in this month of Ramadan, what was happening. They have last 10 odd nights supposed to be the more holier nights where apparently you get the more blessings or, you know, other things. Okay, anyways, he did all of those nice things. And he gets all of these things, but then God tells, he asks God, wait, what's wrong? Why am I not getting my lottery ticket? So God answers back to him. This is just a joke. He goes, hey, you still haven't gotten bought your lottery ticket. So basically, you know, the moral of the joke is that God helps those who help themselves. So unless you don't put in the effort, you know, it's not just going to happen magically by sitting on a prayer mat right. Or going to church. Or going
yeah,
to,
but God's there to steal the credit.
I was about to say, because if you put in the effort and it actually comes to fruition, you know, wasn't that just you?
Yeah.
Can't you
pat yourself on the back as, you know, hey, I did this or anyway.
Yeah, that was going to be my question as you were reading the joke. I'm like, he's praying for the tickets, but is he buying them? Like, is that happening in the background? But
you buy enough tickets, you're going to win, you know, but you're going to lose money.
Yeah. So
obviously, it's a gamble. So that's what the whole joke was about, you know.
Okay.
So the thing is, like, we're supposed to be, at least in our faith, we're supposed to attribute everything to God. And says, like, if good things happen, we're supposed to thank God. There's special prayers that, you know, sometimes I do, good things happen to me. Like, Liverpool won the UEFA Champions League last night, and all the Liverpool fans out there, hey, we kicked butt. Anyway, so I thank God for that, because I actually prayed for Liverpool to win. So, you know, these small things, like, you know, everybody goes, on a more serious note, everybody goes, you know, the way, what I've learned from my studies of Islam and the way I've been raised is that, you know, your life is a test. So there's going to be good things and there's going to be bad things. And God wants the best from you if you go through some of the hard times, because you learn from your mistakes and eventually something, a better reward is waiting for you if you're patient and stuff. So for example, you know,
Sorry.
I have an issue.
This is rubbing me wrong, man.
Yeah, that. I was. Did you want to
go ahead? I mean, this whole idea of divine justice is pretty sad. It's a way of oppressing people and saying, well, you know, in the next life you're gonna have, you know, pie in the sky when you die, sort of.
Yeah, I take issue. I guess my main issue with it is just, you know, if you're looking at this life as, you know, you have this next one coming, you have this better one that's on the way, you know, as long as you do well here, then you'll totally get the good ending, once you, you know, get to that point. And, you know, as you're looking at life and a lot of the issues that we're seeing around us, the suffering and just a lot of the problems that, we're seeing, it just rubs me the wrong way, because I'm like, all these problems are happening right here, right now to real people. You know, as that we can see, that we can measure, that we can reach out and touch so many of these problems that are here. And just, you know, the thought of, you know, this just being a practice run while you're down here before you get to that real thing later on, and not necessarily paying as much attention. The way that I look at it is, you know, if this is the only life that we have evidence for, this is the time to get all those things done, to fix all those problems that you're seeing, to try to have that impact and help others around, not waiting for your next life to start. Just as long as you do little good things here and there, as your life moves on,
have some investment in this life.
Yeah, and it's just, I don't know. It's a very interesting concept on that side. But I guess it depends on what kind of life you decide to live in. Anyway, random aside. Sorry.
Well, it's a good thought. I like where you're going with. You know, I personally, you know, in Islam, there's two things that have been taught to me and ingrained to me since I was a kid. It's called sawab and guna. Sawab means blessings, and guna means, you know, sins. You know, God is upset with you and God is happy with you. So you get the positive points and the negative points. I personally believe that, well, all those points are welcome, and I don't have any issues with those points. I personally want to help people and be a good person, even if I wasn't getting any of these points, even if I wasn't being cursed for it, even if I wasn't getting any sort of spiritual benefit from it. I just want to be a good person because that's the right thing to do.
Wonderful.
And Islam teaches us to be good people anyway. So why not follow the right teachings of the faith and be good human?
So God's irrelevant, right? Because you should just be doing the right thing.
Yeah, because if people, you know, people that are in the secular community that don't have any belief in a deity can do good things and can demonstrably have a beneficial impact on their communities, then why would I necessarily follow your beliefs in order to reach that same point?
Well, Saad, thank you for your call. I think we're going to move on to other callers, but we do appreciate you calling.
Okay, appreciate it. It was a really nice talk, by the way.
Okay,
thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go to, let's see, I'm trying to work the phone. Theo in the UAE, in the United Arab Emirates.
Yep, that's right. Can you hear me, Don?
Yes.
Yes, we can.
You're asking what our take is on morality. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose this kind of ties in neatly with the first caller and with Karen and now with Saad. So if you don't mind, if we just start, if you can kind of give me like a little summary of what your view is of what morality is.
Boy. You know, I guess I view morality as taking responsibility for the consequences of your actions and the effects of those actions on the world. I don't know. It's kind of a simple-minded sort of view. I view that intelligence is very important for morality. Empathy is very important. Reputation, these sorts of things are very important. And to amplify, you know, the empathy part of it is you want to help others feel like you want to do to other people that you'd want them to do to you. This idea of reciprocity or tit for tat is very old. It's not a Christian idea at all.
If I could summarize it in this way, and you can tell me sure. If you agree with this. So for me, it kind of goes about like three parts. Part one would be doing the right and the fair thing without expectation of praise or reward. And in particular, if it's not in your personal best interest to do so. And then part two would be kind of the opposite, avoiding doing the wrong and unfair thing, even if there would be no repercussions. And in particular, if doing the wrong and unfair thing would have otherwise been in your favor.
Well,
and then part three would be that morality applies to everybody equally.
Well, there's also, I guess, a component that I would look at there is, you know, as you're talking about, you know, doing the right thing and the wrong thing, it's also something to establish what the goal is in the first place. Like, you know, it's for me, morality, you know, it's a changing construct as we learn new information about ourselves and our species and how we interact and the effects that we have on one another that can change the way my outlook goes. And, you know, I learn new things and, you know, maybe I shouldn't do that because, you know, it's affecting this person negatively. And I had no idea, you know, before. And I'm just now, you know, learning, you know, X, Y, Z. But, you know, it's looking at the society that I want to be in, the world that I want to live in, and, you know, trying to establish some goals inside of there, you know, wanting people to be able to live in housing, wanting to be able to have access to food and water, like those, you know, setting these goals and then using that to help determine what's right and wrong, you know, what helps pursue those goals, what hinders those goals, how our actions have effects on other people, you know, having empathy for others, not just trying to, you know, get ahead at all costs, even if that cost comes at a loss of others in a very large way. You know, it's a very complicated construct, and it's still something that, you know, I still, you know, go through and, you know, change and evolve over time. And, right. You know, as, you know, the month goes on or, you know, next year, there may be some views that I had this year that have changed and adapted to new information that I've received. And, I will be honest to say that I'm willing to get that additional information and to better myself in order to help further the goals that I think are important, in the world that I want to see.
So
yeah,
Theo,
I think that's fair. Yeah.
So Theo, I'm actually okay with your definition, with maybe the quibble that you seem to have fairness being a pretty important part of it. And I guess I would want to have consequences and impact and repercussions as a big part of it.
Well, when I say fairness, I mean just in the sense of having empathy for the other person, and that you're not doing something because there's some reward for you, or you don't do something because there might be punishment for you.
Well,
if that makes sense.
Well, there may necessarily be a reward for you. So, you know, when I go out and volunteer, for example, you know, I get fulfillment out of that. You know, I enjoy it. You know, I'm, you know, getting something out of it, so to speak, but that doesn't negate, you know, the good or the impact that it's having on others. And so I wouldn't necessarily.
Oh, absolutely.
You know,
yeah.
I wouldn't necessarily make it as concrete as, you know, doing something that doesn't have, you know, any intrinsic benefit or fulfillment for myself. It just so happens to be that way for me. It's, I don't know.
Yeah, no. I mean, the primary goal isn't with you in mind. It's about doing something for someone else.
Okay, that's a little better.
Right. Okay. So, because I think part of the conversation on morality, where we go from there, is to say then, well, is because, I mean, we've seen this so many times, how religious people say, oh, but you must be religious because it teaches morality and blah, blah, blah. Okay, so then the next question would be, okay, is God moral? Because if we can agree that morality is a good thing, then surely if God is good, because that's what your texts say, then God must be good. But then let's substitute this idea for God for a human being. This God creates people and he tells them that, you know, they're basically his property and they have to do as he says, et cetera, et cetera. Well, now substitute that idea for a human being. If some mad scientist created a bunch of human beings and told them to do the exact same thing, we'd label him a monster.
Right.
So why on earth would you, you know, agree or...
Well, then you get into special pleading that, oh, God is special because he's the creator and he gets to do what he wants and blah, blah, blah.
Or at the very least, you know, sees all ends and has a larger plan that you can't comprehend.
It's the best possible world we
can. Yeah.
I mean, what do you guys think? Like, why don't people just think more about these things?
I mean, that's not something that you're taught to do. I mean, in a lot of religious upbringing, that's, you know, to question the word of God or the words of your pastor or preacher's minister, you know, whatever it is in your denomination. It's not necessarily something that's encouraged to question this directive that you were just given, or this verse says X, Y, Z. You don't come back and say, well, oh, why the bloody hell does it say that?
Well, that's,
because that doesn't make sense.
Questioning's the path to atheism and
you know,
the path to hell.
That's, right. Yeah, that's doing,
to
that's doing
sure.
too much.
So there's a lot of fear, and there's a lot of indoctrination.
Right? Yeah, yeah, for sure. I mean, it's not something that's encouraged. That's for sure. I mean, maybe there's a denomination that doesn't. I, you know, considering the amount that are out there, maybe there is one that's like, yeah, we're all about that questioning life around here. But that was definitely not my upbringing. It wasn't something that was encouraged. And if you did, it's something that was frowned upon. That. You know, I would get talked to by my parents or grandparents, or, you know, we would have a sit down with the pastor,
right,
to talk about the questions you were having, stuff like that. And so it's not
wouldn't
something
be in front of a lot of people for sure.
No, it wouldn't. Can't have those ideas spread in the congregation.
So our show is unusual in that, you know, we do have theological discussions, you know, we have a particular point of view, but we actually air these things on the and chat about them. And there aren't a lot of shows or venues where you can have true theological discussions and really question things in the theistic world. And I think we have an audience of closeted folks that are, you know, interested in these questions, but don't have other venues to discuss these things.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Especially in certain parts of the world.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Right. There's some terrible consequences for this sort of questioning in places like Bangladesh or even Pakistan, these sorts of things. Anything else, Theo?
Okay. One more thing. Sorry. I don't want to take up too much of your time.
It's too late for that, Theo. It's too late now. no, you're good. Go for it.
Just people not thinking. Like, if you take like the stories in Genesis, where Adam and Eve were naked, but somehow they didn't realize this. Okay, fine. Then they told not to eat from the tree of knowledge. Now, why you would call it the tree of knowledge, that's something very interesting to me.
The knowledge of good and evil, right?
Yeah. But they should know what that was. They should have known.
Didn't know what good and evil was, right?
Just told not to eat that.
That's that forbidden fruit. Gotta taste so sweet.
Next thing is they eat of it, and then they realize that they were naked. So this tells me that God specifically did not want them to know that they were naked. But the truth is that they were naked, so why would he not want them to see the truth?
I don't know.
He didn't want them questioned.
Are you familiar with the idea of a just so story? It's a type of story that is often kind of ridiculous, that is meant to sort of explain something. And so a just so story about why giraffes have long necks is because they have to stretch their necks to reach the best fruit or something like that. And I view a lot of Genesis as just so stories, for why, you know, why humans have to work. Why is life hard? You know, why do women suffer in childbirth? Mm-hmm. Why do we not eat sinew, for example? There's a lot of weird stuff in there. So I would put that in that category.
Yeah.
Anybody who uses that giraffe argument, I would ask them, okay, so why does an ostrich have wings but can't fly?
Yeah, right.
For
right.
Steering.
So this is it's just a genre of stories that, steering. In Texas, we have birds called roadrunners.
Oh, yeah.
And they can fly, but they often are much faster on their feet than they are anyway.
Yeah, I always thought that was interesting, like the being naked and eating from the tree of knowledge, and then realizing, that we're naked, we're going to cover up. But it's who are you worried about at that? Like, there's nobody around to take a look at you, to judge you on that side.
They've already seen each other's bits.
So. You know, I'm just saying, you know, it's like we've been down this road the entire time here. It's just y'all too at this point. Right. And
But you know, so much of Genesis or so much of the Bible is, you know, kind of children's stories that, I don't know, if you really think about them, they really don't make a lot of sense.
No, not even a little bit.
Okay. Right. Well, thank you for your call, Theo.
No, thanks to you guys.
All right. I appreciate it.
Take care. All right. So next, Jonathan from Illinois. What have you got for us today?
You there, Jonathan?
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Okay.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Sorry.
All right. There we go. We're just saying, how's it going? Like, so yeah, just go for it.
You're talking about perpetual existence. You're a deist, right?
Yeah. So I don't associate myself with any particular religion. But philosophy is kind of something I do on the side. So I've developed sort of like an argument, and I kind of want to run it past you guys, see what you think, because always better than inside opinion, in my opinion. I don't know what to say. So it kind of has the first premise starts with since is necessary for existence. I know there's a whole debate about can something come from nothing or is it something before something? And I know this first premise is kind of a little iffy, but
tell me the premise again. You cut out just at the wrong moment.
I think he was trying to explain the Kalam, like that first premise in there, but I think you had a different premise that you wanted to propose, no?
Yeah, so it's not quite the Kalam argument. It's more of like stating the idea that existence is necessary for existence to happen. So the fact that I guess you can kind of say we all come from something, but there's something that needs to exist in order for example, we need our parents to exist in order for us to exist.
Well, it's my understanding that at the quantum level, you know, in the world of the very small, a lot of these sort of armchair ideas that we have about how the universe works are very different. And it's possible to have particles pop into existence and go out of existence without a cause. And, you know, if that is fundamentally what the universe is like, then these sort of armchair descriptions of causality may work in the macroscopic sense, but I don't know if they work for the universe as a whole.
Okay, so it's kind of sort of the possibility that existence can come from nothing almost, or like, I guess I'm trying to understand more specifics.
Well, I guess you might look up virtual particles, but there is a lot of things that happen at the very sort of the tiniest parts of the universe that are not intuitive at all. And one might say even it's almost a different world there than the world that we think we know. And because not only is this possible, but because this is the sort of foundation of what the universe is, it's hard to take an argument seriously where you have to sort of have no cause whatsoever. You know, things can happen in a vacuum, and they do. You know, this argument may have some legs as far as convincing people, but it may not have legs as far as really explaining how the universe works. I don't know if that helps.
I mean, I'll be honest. I'm a bit of a very simple amateur armchair philosopher, if you want to call it that. And it just basically going on the, I mean, it is possible that it could be both is certain things that exist come from other things that exist, but also like the root of certain things, like as you said, on a microscopic level, could come from something that nothing could come before that it just kind of pops into existence, as you said. But, and so like my premise is kind of more on the simplistic version of generally speaking, as far as what we know and understand, that there is existence that causes other existence. So it's not necessarily a cause to it, but there needs to be an existence before other things exist. So like I said, with the parent, the child, it is necessary for the parent to exist mm-hmm. in order for the child to eventually exist. So it's kind of basing on that sort of idea.
Yeah.
Of
So let's jump ahead a little bit. Are you going to go down the road of the Kalam, or are you going to say, well, there's had to have been a first cause, or there had to have been something, you know, that caused the universe, and therefore we're going to call that God?
No, it's slightly different than that. So it's not kind of going to a first cause sort of thing.
Okay.
It's kind of more the, as I call it, kind of a perpetual existence. So, I mean, this kind of alludes to sort of the, kind of the first cause, but it's kind of, I think it's more of the Thomas Aquinas argument. I forget which one, but kind of the, it can't go on forever or else there is no first cause ever. Everything is just kind of as it is, and there's no, you can't trace it back to infinity, more or less, is kind of part of that premise. So I kind of took that saying that there kind of has to be a starting point that has no starting point. I know it's kind of...
Yeah, it's definitely making an assumption on that side, honest, because
I think the safest thing to say is we don't know. We don't know how the universe came to be, and we don't have any reason to think that there's a consciousness there. There may be something beyond what we know, but...
There could totally be a cause that was there, but... You know, when you're looking at, you know, the universe and you're talking about, you know, we can examine, you know, back to the Big Bang and kind of, you know, look at the expansion and kind of measure that, but we don't know what created that first, you know, boom to really kick things off. You know, it's always funny to me to attribute anything to that because people say, oh, it has to be, you know, timeless. Like there's all the first cause arguments that really come out there has to be timeless, always has existed. It has to exist outside of the space and time because we're in this space and time and you can't create it if you're inside it. So that can't work, that type of thing. But as Don said, the best information that we have right now is we don't know what was the cause of that initial thing. We have different ideas about it, but until we get some more information about that, all we could say is, hey, you know, we got this theory of how things kind of expanded. We can kind of look at that and explain that and how the planets formed. Cool, awesome, but we don't know what made that initial thing. We don't know what that was or what the conditions necessarily were to start that. And until we find that out, everything else is kind of like throwing around ideas about the issue,
right,
versus actually, you know, people making assertions that not only was it a deity, but it was this particular type that did it here. And it has these attributes to it, everything else down the line. I know you're a deist, so you don't attribute those additional attributes there. But if you're saying, if you're believing in a God, that's still, you're still attributing more attributes than we have knowledge of at the current time.
Well, and right. And that's kind of, I mean, this argument that I have is not necessarily, I mean, a lot of people believe that God has the attributes of perpetual existence, but it's more of kind of showing, because the end of my argument, and this is why I wanted to talk to you guys, because I trust you guys are output rather than my own input. But the conclusion kind of goes to that some perpetual existence is necessary for other things to exist. So, I mean, yeah, it is kind of similar to the Kalam cosmological, but it's not necessarily cause. So, like, things can exist outside of causing other things, right? So I can exist and then another person can be born on the outside, or, you know, on the other side of the world, be born, and my existence has nothing necessarily to do, or my existence has no cause to that other existence. But it kind of, this perpetual existence. So, like, I guess, for example, using the Earth. So let's say, like, the Earth needs to exist in order for us to exist here on Earth as far as people. So it's kind of more of going back to the necessity of existence and what is necessary to exist in order for the rest of what we know as existence to exist. I don't know if that makes a lot of sense or not.
If that gets you out of the maybe some of the special pleading, but if something has to always exist, then why can't it just be the universe? Maybe the universe existed in a different form before the Big Bang, and it's always existed. And so you can apply that argument equally well to a more atheistic worldview, where you say, well, this is not giving us any evidence for a God necessarily. It's, you know, you're debating about things that may be outside of our even being possible for us to understand, in the sense that we may not be able to ever know what happened before the Big Bang, if there even was a before. I think that I know of one cosmologist who would basically say that time began at that time, and so there is no notion of before. So the notion of cause doesn't even make sense. But assuming that a universe existed all the time, why not have that be the thing that always existed? And in which case, you don't need a God.
Well, right. And that's kind of, I mean, and that's the thing. It's like my argument that I'm developing, recovering from a cold. My argument that I'm kind of developing is kind of, again, leaning more towards, is perpetual existence necessary for existence? And then I guess whatever we find that qualifies for that, because my argument is kind of mainly pointing that something needs to exist that has perpetual existence in order to explain how we exist, not necessarily kind of a cause, but kind of more of a starting point that kind of, you know, sort of the domino effect sort of thing, where, you know, one thing exists and then everything kind of in some way, shape, or form is kind of directly correlated from that. It's kind of trying to formulate the idea, is perpetual existence necessary, or is there another explanation? And I'm willing to take God out of it, but
I would suggest that you look up the Kalam cosmological argument, which is very similar. I think you're making a variant of it, is really what I think you're doing. And you might look up some of the criticisms of it and follow those threads and see if they also apply to your argument. That would be my suggestion for you.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like to me, you're coming up with another idea, another take on it. And, you know, it may be a philosophical discussion, but currently that we know of, we don't have the tools or the skills to investigate that type of thing, or even to try to substantiate that a perpetual existence is even possible in that form that you're talking about. And so it's kind of, yeah, just, I don't know, throwing around ideas and seeing what makes sense, I suppose, rather than actually looking for a cogent explanation and actually verifying that idea against what we observe in the universe. But, you know, it's a different idea, but it's my take on it.
Well, thank you for your call, Jonathan. I think I'm going to let you go.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for taking your call. Take my call.
Bye. All right. Let's see. We have Stephen in New York. You're wondering how to come out. Is that right?
Well, sort of. I would have gone into a little more detail with it with a call screener, but I was a little starstruck because I didn't expect to get on the show.
Okay.
You're here now.
You're here. You made
it. I'm a huge fan.
You've arrived.
Thank you. So I'm on with Don and who else?
Phil. I'm over here. Now that.
Oh, hi, Phil.
Random dude with the fro to the side. Yeah, it's fine.
I'm on my phone. I can't see you. I know who you are. I've seen the show a lot. I'm actually, I've been a closeted atheist since November 19th. I consider that my new birthday.
Okay. Well, not every atheist has a day that they can point at.
Yeah, one of my friends on Twitter has it, keeps reminding me of it.
Okay.
Those lovely Twitter friends.
Is this a day that you want to forget? Is that what you want? Anyway.
No. But anyway, it wasn't exactly looking for advice on how to come out, but more asking if what I'm currently doing in church as a Sunday school teacher that's secretly an atheist is a bad idea. I'm a Sunday school teacher for the Salvation Army.
You said you are a...
You cut out a little bit. Are you saying you are a Sunday school teacher?
I am, yes.
Oh, okay.
How about that?
and I've been a Sunday school teacher for several years and a pretty big part of my church. So I'm not really... I'm trying not to ruin what I have because, like, a lot of family stuff, pretty much every friend I have in person kind of hinges on me being a big member of the church. And I'm getting pressure to stay in the church and stay very active in it. Like when I try and take a step back, the people in the church and my family push me to get back into it. So it's a bit tough to try and get out of it without letting anyone know that I'm an atheist.
No, I understand. That's a tricky problem. And, you know, this reminds me of the Clergy Project, which is really geared at clergy members who have come out and figured out that they're atheistic and they are sort of stuck in these jobs and stuck with these loads of expectations that sound very similar to what you're struggling with. And I would suggest looking that up and maybe trying to join that group if that's even possible, given your status.
I have looked into them.
Mm-hmm.
I have looked into the Clergy Project. I know I hear you guys mention it all the time. I've probably watched 500 of your episodes at this point.
I'm sorry.
Several months. but what I've been trying to do is rather than get out of the clergy and try to find support in that way, sort of using my position to reform my church into something a bit less fundamentalist, if you know what I mean. Like, for instance, mm-hmm. I've helped my specific church weed themselves off of the pseudoscientific answers in Genesis crap.
I see.
And now most of the clergy members accept, at least in my church, accept Big Bang evolution and just see God as the cause of that. And
wow. Well, that's a big step forward, you know, actually.
This is 007 agent covertness here.
A discussion on homosexuality.
You're getting some applause from the audience. But it's a bit of a dangerous game, though, because if you are discovered, you might end up having the issue backfire, or things might get ugly. But I do see where you're going, and I do think that if you are going to stay in that role, that you sort of do have a moral responsibility to try to nudge your community in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm trying to do is set up systems, get systems in place that I can leave the church planning to move somewhere else. We're not going to have to deal with the church anymore. So I'm sort of planning on getting out of the living systems that will continue this mentality of at least having one of the less damaging types of Christianity in place that won't hinge on me.
Yeah. Make them think it was their idea.
Yeah, sort of like that.
Yeah, because that that concerns me when you're saying that, you know, if you want to step back or, you know, try to pull things back a little bit, your role and everything else, and then you get all of this pressure that's trying to, you know, push you, even if it was just like, oh, you want to, you know, start focusing on something else, or you want to start exploring the world a little more. And it's just like this mm-hmm. constant pressure to push you back into the same role is concerning, you know, whether you were, you know, regardless of how you identify, I see that as concerning on that side, for your well-being. If you don't feel free to be able to just, you know, even pull back a little bit and enjoy your life a little more without all of this, familial or church pressure to, you know, make you fall back in line. That's concerning of mine.
I've sort of come to terms with the fact that I'm at least not anytime soon going to be able to come out. It's not just family situations. There's a pretty big thing at stake. If my family lost communication with me, or if they decided to cut me out, that is one thing. But my sister in particular is sort of looking to me as her pillar of faith. Like, she sees me as one of the holiest people in the church, as some...
Oh, the irony, huh?
Yeah. But she is sort of looking at me and thinking, he still believes, and I can still cling to the idea that I'll be able to see mom and dad again, because I remember she heard me share that I don't believe in the literal flood of Noah. And she was like, do you believe in heaven too? And I was like, oh crap, I can't tell her.
I can't
tell her how I have to feel about it.
Well, that's like a lot of pressure. You know, personally, I would tend to want to gravitate towards a situation where I didn't have so much pressure on me, but you know, you do have a kind of unique situation there. I hate to do this, but your call is pretty chattery as far as the
audio quality.
Audio quality, and so
that might be my crappy headphones.
Yeah,
can I try and unplug them and see if that works?
Well, I was just going to let you go, but our call screener wants to talk to you, so I was going to put you on hold and let them take over. So, well, good luck to you. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. Take care, man.
Yeah. So just stay there on hold. The call screen should be able to
hear
you again.
Let's see. Let us take Charles from Arkansas.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Hey, Charles.
Doing all right.
You wanted to talk about whether we're on a path or not?
No, it was Taoism.
Taoism.
What I was trying to talk to the screener about.
I don't know too much about
very
that.
Very familiar with it.
Yeah, not as much.
So maybe you can tell us what that is very briefly.
Well, in a way, it's kind of hard to tell you, because if I could tell you, then I'm not telling you. I'm not hearing you.
You know, we're here.
it's a path. You know, life's a path. The universe is a path. It all has it's unrolling. It's unfolding. And you're a part of it. And we're a part of it.
Well, that's a particular view. I did a show a while back on purpose. God has a purpose for you or whatever. And I don't think that atheists believe there is.
I don't believe in God and a purpose. That's mm-hmm. not what I was trying to get at.
Mm-hmm.
But you seem to think the universe has got, you know, some sort of thoughts for you, right?
No. The universe isn't thinking or anything. Mm-hmm. The universe happened, and we happen as a result of the universe happening. How the universe mm-hmm. happened, I don't know. Nobody knows. But we're here and we exist, and we got one life that we know of. We're here now. Mm-hmm. And why not live that life in the best manner that you possibly can? And when you do things that are wrong, you steal or you cheat or you lie, you get these negative effects. And when you do good things to people and you help people, then you feel enjoyment, pleasure, and goodness. So the path is, you know, there's no distinguishable path. It's just what you're feeling is whether it's correct or not. And if you know you're doing something that feels wrong, you're on the wrong path.
Well, it seems like what you're describing is kind of a basic moral system where, you know, you're behaving in such a way that you are cognizant of your impact to the world and other people, and the other people are reacting to how you are treating them, and, you know, it's all sort of how things should work. I don't see a strong need to put any sort of mystical spin on it.
I don't see that there's a mystical spin. I'm not sure what mystical spin you're seeing in it.
Well, you know, I don't know if Taoism is a proper religion, from what I understand, and I don't know if we need to even bring that into the picture. I don't know if it helps the explanation at all. It seems like it's a bit of a distraction.
But people crave ritual. People have sort of a craving for, you know, that something that they hold on to, that, you know, because I don't believe God exists, but it doesn't mean he doesn't. You dig? And
yeah.
And it's just a more of a path, more of a system that can remind you and keep you in touch and keep you in a state of truth within yourself. You know, it's
okay. I can see that. My concern would be that sometimes those thoughts and those ideas take on a life of their own, beyond sort of as a crutch or as a way of, you know, just reminding yourself of something, right? So as long as it's clear to you that, you know, you're just using this as a mnemonic or a crutch to do the right thing, then I'm okay with it.
Using it as a crutch, wouldn't that be me saying, well, I'm going to do the right thing because I believe in this system? Because that's not what I'm trying to say.
Right, right.
I do the right thing because it's the right thing.
There you go.
Okay.
That's basically what Taoism is. You just do the right things because it's the right things. It's not.
Okay.
There's nobody judging or putting pressure on. It's just.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, there's a lot of as you've been talking, I've been looking it up a little bit online. There's a lot of variation to that. I mean, there's some. It says that, you know, it could be described as a pantheist type of doctrine on that side, and there are some frameworks that are there. But, you know, from what you've described,
maybe we're getting hung up on this Taoism thing, and we're not listening to just the do the right thing. So I think we're in agreement on the do the right thing thing.
Right, just for the sake of doing right. But yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, that's the right path. You don't want to do wrong, and it doesn't take a god. It doesn't take none of that stuff. But, you know,
agreed.
Taoism is where I came through that path. I started off as a Christian and tried to look at Judaism and Islam and try to find the truth in all of that. The closest thing that I found was this Taoism that says that I don't have to believe in any sort of God, but I could find a way and a reason to keep on wanting to keep on. And because the world can be pretty crappy sometimes.
Yep.
And
yeah. Yep.
Start to get to that point where, like, what's the point? If I just know that I'm going to die, I'm going to become a part of the universe again, then, you know, why don't I go blow my head off? But through Taoism, it showed that, you know, there is a reason, and that's to take care of your brother and to take care of everybody else. And
yeah, that sounds, sounds very similar to secular humanism as well, from what you're, you know, just on the face of what you're describing.
I've heard that term from y'all, and maybe that's the term I need to start leaning on.
Yeah, it's definitely something to research on your side, because, you know, from what you've explained to me, you kind of hit on some of those major points that this is the one life that we know that we have, you know, doing right just for the sake of helping others, because it's worth it to do it just for that alone, not for necessarily a reward or as an avoidance to a judgment or punishment that comes later. So I would definitely take the time to take a look, because it seems like you're kind of on that path already from the way you broke it down.
Sounds like you're a seeker, right?
I have definitely always been a seeker. Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, yeah. You know, I think I don't have a big issue with anything you've said. I think you're doing great, and I hope that maybe you can spread some of your good thoughts around.
Yeah, especially out there in Arkansas.
yeah. You're right about that.
Well, I'm going to let you go.
Thank you all, gentlemen.
Thank you very much for your call.
Have a great afternoon.
You do.
All right. Thank you. So I'm going to take one last call, and it's going to be Daniel in Wisconsin. And the other callers, I'm very sorry. We've run out of time, but we're going to take Daniel. Daniel, you want to talk about genocide in the Bible? Is that correct?
That's correct.
What in particular did you want to talk about?
Well, first of all, let me apologize for being, I must have been pretty rude last week hang up on me like that.
Okay. Well, we weren't there.
Nope.
So. Oh, actually I was.
Oh, were you?
Yeah, you were there.
Okay.
Yeah, you were there.
What was he rude, Don?
I don't remember anybody being rude last time.
Yeah,
but,
I didn't.
But I'm over 50. So, you know, it's memory's bad.
It was, when I brought up giants in the Bible. Does that refresh your memory a little bit?
Yes, it does. It does.
The Nephilim.
Yeah.
With the sons of God coming down and mating with the daughters of man.
Yeah, well, it's a just so story, right? It's trying to get around the incest thing, I think. Anyway,
okay. but I feel like you guys are being a little intellectually dishonest when it comes to the genocide you keep talking about in the Bible. That's leading people to believe that God is somehow unjustifiably just killing off.
So how about Noah's flood? Is that a genocide?
Yeah.
Okay. Was it justified?
Why was the earth flooded?
Because God fucked up and he didn't like what he created, and so he decided to wipe the slate clean.
I don't agree with that at all. I believe it's because the people were incredibly evil. Even all their thoughts were evil and wicked, the Bible says.
You think that the unborn babies in the wombs of the women who were killed were also evil?
Or just collateral damage?
I think God is outside of, you know, our thoughts and knew that they would grow up to be evil just like their parents.
Well, if that was the case, didn't he know before he created this first set that they were going to be evil and he was going to have to wipe the slate clean in the first place?
Of course.
So that that points to a few inefficiencies.
How so? Because I believe that points to the fact that eventually the world was going to be saved just like how Noah and his family was saved through Jesus Christ, of course.
And that's a good system to go for, to create something that you know is going to become problematic, that you know is going to reach a certain end, but still say, you know what, that's the best I've got. Let's just go with this and we'll flood the earth and we'll try again, even though you know where it's going to go. It seems a bit far-fetched, I guess, to say the least, to say that this is the best that this being could come up with. On this side, I mean, I don't take, of course, the Bible literally in any slightest hand of the word, but that seems a pretty bad way to go about creating life. But, you know, maybe his ways are just, you know, way beyond what I can comprehend. But, you know, we can do a little better on The Sims. Like
I can do better.
It's just like that's
does that make me better than your God? I think it does.
Like, because if I'm creating, you know, this entire world, this universe, this species, and I know that these bad things are going to happen, I'm going to have to punish these beings that I've created. And I can see all these actions that may make me take two steps back to say, you know what? I need to re-examine what I'm doing. Something about how I'm setting this up is leading to this. What am I doing wrong? Or should I even do this at all if this is going to be the result? You know, it's, you know, having compassion for, you know, these creations that you're making. If you can't even have that compassion and you have the foresight to see all this stuff that's coming down the pike, if you can't even take the time to look at that and stop and take stock of what you're doing, then we kind of have a problem with that thought process and decision making.
Were these people not warned to turn away from their evil?
Did he not know that they were going to ignore that warning and still proceeded with the creation anyway?
Well, they have free will.
Well, they totally have free will, but
what
if...
What kind of love is outside of free will?
Well, the love that wouldn't lead someone to create a beings just to punish them later, knowing that was going to be the case. That isn't love to me. It's certainly not something that I would do with my creation.
Disobey doesn't mean they had to disobey.
Well, no, they didn't have to disobey. But if you're setting up the entire system, including you're setting up the entire framework, their creation, the punishment, the reward, the entire system, you're responsible for that, especially if you have the foresight and knowledge of what's coming down the pike in the first place, and you still decide, yes, we're going to still move ahead with this lovely plan, even though it's going to lead me to torture millions of my own creations. It's still fine. Now, that's something I would definitely have a problem with.
Child sin?
I'm sorry?
Is a father responsible for his child's sins?
No.
For his child's disobedience, for his child's evil?
No, not on that side. But if you had the foresight...
That child was a product of the sexual intercourse with his mother.
But he didn't actually create, number one, the entire system. He didn't have the foresight to know exactly what that being would do versus someone that made the entire thing from scratch as far as the understanding goes. That's a whole different dynamic than somebody having birth, as millions of animals around the world do all the time, and is holding them responsible for the actions of their offspring. That's a whole different thing than literally I'm going to make the rules, the system, and all the characters in between, knowing exactly what they're going to do and then proceeding down the pike anyway. But anyway.
How do we know that God didn't choose to not know?
How do we know that God existed at all?
Okay. Now we're off in crazy.
A little bit, but but we've reached the end of the show anyway.
Yeah, Daniel, thank you for your call. You're welcome to call again. But we're going to end the show. Thank you, Phil, for being an awesome co-host. And thank you for those folks behind the wall here who make the show happen every week. They're awesome. They are totally awesome. And yay!
Oh, the crew, of course. All right, that's good. In the back. But
bye-bye.
Yeah, I did want to plug one more thing before we to snap up to the end of the show that, it's something I've talked about before. I talked about it when I was, you'll see it on Godless Bitches in 2 weeks from now or so. But I did want to plug again the Women of Color Beyond Belief conference that's happening in Chicago, Illinois on October 4th through the 6th on that side. And so if you're in that area, it's one of the first secular conferences that will feature all women of color. And, it's a voice that we don't, hear as much from in the atheist community. And I'm very excited that this thing is coming down. And so I spared no shortage to make sure that I put that out there because I'm going to be there. I just booked my tickets just yesterday.
All right.
To get out there so I can go out there and learn something myself on that side. And so, regardless of your ethnicity or minority status, it's something to go to and learn and grow from, especially in the secular community. But with that, that's all from us.
Amen. All right.
Take care.